Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Try to be best, cause you're only a man, and a man's got to learn to take it. Try to believe, though the going gets rough, that you got a hand tough to make it.
We got a big show tonight. I still haven't seen Cobra Kai yet. I feel like you're throwing it in my face.
A little bit, yeah.
How do you know I didn't see it?
Because you would have come in here and said, hey, I saw Cobra Kai and it was really good.
You're right. What if I want to keep that for the air?
What? I just feel like you would be so, because you enjoyed the first two episodes by your own admission.
Oh, absolutely.
And I know that the rest of it is so good that I don't know that you'd be able to hold it.
You're right. I don't have that good of a poker face where I'm like, I'm going to wait, and then just bust out, give you every episode, what I liked, what I found funny. I just haven't had the chance to see it yet. Believe me, I want to see, like, we've been talking about this for months, Danny. Believe me, I want to see this, but I need to find the time.
Mark Hockman beat you to it.
I know he did, and he was ripping season two. I think he was criticizing season two a little bit.
Well, season two had a bit of a darker turn.
Okay, don't tell me.
I'm just telling you.
Does Mr. Miyagi not come back?
No, Mr. Miyagi still stays dead.
Okay, just want to make sure. I saw his work in Honeymoon in Vegas as the taxi driver. It was very good.
I actually saw Pat Morita in an old movie I was watching the other night, 1975's Midway, starring Charlton Heston.
Okay, never saw it, never heard of it, but I'll get a pass on that one. Anyway, Kevin Rogers with you till 10 o'clock. Adam Beasley of the Miami Herald will join us coming up in about 15 minutes or so-ish. He had a really interesting article he put out about Josh Rosen, the new quarterback for the Dolphins, and his upbringing in California. And there's a lot of interesting points and things you didn't know, none of us knew until you read it. So we're going to talk to Adam about that coming up in about 15 minutes or so, just to get a little insight on that. Meanwhile, Randy Moeller will join us as well from the Florida Panthers, of course, TV, formerly of radio. And a lot of stuff going on with the Panthers, because don't forget that the NBA draft's tomorrow. The NHL draft is Friday night in Vancouver, and I'll be part of the coverage. Doug Plagans, the voice of the Panthers, he'll be up in Vancouver for that. And the Panthers draft 13th, and there's a lot to go over with Randy as well, and Alexander Barkov. He is up for an award tonight, the NHL awards going on right now in Las Vegas, so we will get to that with Randy coming up a little bit later on. So we got a lot to get to over the next 2 hours. All right. Obviously, even though the NBA Finals ended last week, the Raptors beat the Warriors, and the season's over, the season is just beginning. The games are over, but the season of free agency, movement, trades, all that is underway. We saw with Anthony Davis now going to the Lakers, and today Mike Conley going from the Grizzlies to the Jazz, and Memphis is just breaking that thing down, and they're going to start all over again with Ja Morant. That's going to be our guy. Marc Gasol later, Mike Conley later, that the Grizzlies are moving forward, the Jazz getting a very proven point guard, even though Mike Conley has not been to an All-Star game. Kind of interesting, but I guess when you have all those point guards in the Western Conference, it's going to be kind of hard. But they want to get Conley off the books. He goes to Utah now. The West, we know, is wide open because of Kevin Durant out for next year, Klay Thompson probably out for all of next year, and the Warriors are moving into a brand-new building with just Steph Curry. That's it. Who knows if DeMarcus Cousins comes back? So, a lot there. Meanwhile, with the Heat, Hassan Whiteside is going to allegedly pick up his option. I can't really blame him at all. And this is where, you know, it always goes back to you know, don't you care about winning? Don't you want to go to a team that can help get you a championship? Hassan Whiteside has a $27.1 million player option on his contract. There is no way that guy is saying, you know what, I'm going to reject this. I'm going to go test the market. I don't need this $27 million free dollars just by saying yes. So $27 million that he's due, and you just get it by saying, okay, can't blame him. I can't. You would think for the Heat's sake that he would reject it, and the Heat can look to fill the void of Hassan Whiteside with anybody else. But in today's world, I can't blame you. I wish I could be so easy to rip him, but to get that kind of money and then worrying about your next move after that, I'll just take this $27 million and put it in the bank account. And then we'll worry about everything else later. So the Heat are picking 13th tomorrow night. And we all know Zion Williamson is going number one to the Pelicans. Ja Morant's going to go number two to Memphis. RJ Barrett's going to go number three to the Knicks. And then after that, the Pelicans have the fourth pick after the trade for Anthony Davis from the Lakers. You got New Orleans and Cleveland and Phoenix, and the Heat end up going 13th. I think we're all lying to ourselves if we know exactly who the Heat are going to take. And if you go back through the years of the Heat, can you find me an impact player taken outside the top five for the Heat? Probably very difficult. Obviously, number one guy is Dwayne Wade. Even a guy like Michael Beasley, you thought would be the future, was taken number two. But the Heat aren't exactly going to find that guy at number 13 in the first round. You go back, Glenn Rice and Steve Smith. Plenty of players the Heat hit on in the top five, top 10. But once you get to 13th, and I look at some of the names here, I see this one mock draft from CBSSports.com. And it's a player out of France. Siku, I'm not going to say his last name. I can't. He's 6'9 out of France. Could be a good player. I mean, I don't see why not. I mean, who knew who Giannis Antetokounmpo was? This big guy out of Greece, long player, went in the middle of the first round. I have no idea who you are. Ends up being a star in the NBA. So we can't exactly say that because we've heard of you, you're going to be great, and because I've never heard of you, you're not going to be anything. That's an unfair thing to say. And there are so many players in the NBA that we've seen. I mean, I will always go back to this. Love them or hate them, probably hate them, but when you look at what the Golden State Warriors have done, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, and Draymond Green, none of them were top five picks. The only top five pick they have, actually two of them, is Andrew Bogut, who went number one, and Kevin Durant. Obviously, they didn't draft both those two, but those were players that were slotted in those picks by the teams that drafted them. But the Warriors found a way at number 10, number 13, second round, to get elite players. They're out there. Really good players are out there. And there are guys that go number one like Anthony Bennett who stink and aren't in the NBA anymore. So that's kind of where this whole thing is, that you can go through all of these players that any of these teams, forget about the Heat, any of these teams can select. Now, obviously, the Pelicans feel like Zion can be a franchise changer. Now he's going to be the franchise. It was going to be him and Anthony Davis, and now it's just him. And some other players, Drew Holiday, and some other guys that are decent, probably not enough to win the West. I mean, obviously not. I mean, the Lakers have LeBron and Anthony Davis, and people think they need a little bit more. I think they need a little bit more. But we look at all these players, and you don't know who's going to be that once-in-a-lifetime changing player, because we've had guys that don't tell me you thought Damian Lillard was going to be good out of Weber State. Don't tell me CJ McCollum out of Lehigh, you were going to expect him to be an all-star. You just can't say those things. Nobody can say that. That's why it's so hard to look at this and say, oh, well, RJ Barrett's going to be really good with the Knicks. I don't know. He could not be. But also, when you go to the middle of the first round and the Pistons or the Pacers or the Magic or some of these teams can hit on somebody that can be a total franchise changer. And that's exactly where we sit going into it. Same thing with the NHL. Even though, admittedly, I don't know a lot of these players. It's very hard when, with college basketball, I mean, college football, number one, you've seen these guys play on Saturdays. College football is like pro football light. You watch it. You know who these guys are for the most part. Maybe not offensive linemen from Iowa, but you know for the most part who they are. You've heard of them. You see Kyler Murray, you know who he is. Same thing with basketball. You get to hockey. College hockey is not big in this. College hockey is big in certain parts of the country. You have guys that play in Europe. You have guys that play in Canada. We don't follow it. So it's very hard to say, oh, well, the Panthers at 13. If you don't follow it, the Panthers at 13, this is a good guy to get. We don't know. Like, really, we don't know. And if you have these once-in-a-lifetime talents like Sidney Crosby or Connor McDavid or some of these other guys that are just franchise changers, yeah, you get about number one. And there's obviously very good players not pick number one. So New Orleans, the best part about New Orleans is they don't have to think about this. They got their guy. When they won the lottery, they're like, okay, we're getting Zion. We're all set. We're fine. So that's where it's very hard to go on here and say, well, if the Heat get this guy, he's going to, this junior swingman from where, like, come on. We don't know how it's going to work out. You don't know how they'll respond. I mean, look at Michael Beasley as the number one example. The guy led college basketball in points per game at Kansas State, and I believe one of the top rebounders in the country. He was fantastic. He had off-the-court issues. He was a tremendous talent, but he just had issues off the court, and he couldn't overcome them.
I remember my first red flag with Michael Beasley was we drafted him. He was kind of a 3-4 in college. He was a high rebounder, like you said. And he made a statement before the season started. Well, I don't really see myself as a 4. I'm more of a 3 and a shooter. And I went, uh-oh.
Yeah, and that was a draft that you had. Russell Westbrook was right behind. I mean, Derrick Rose went number one.
You had Kevin Love.
Yep.
Brook Lopez.
Yeah, there were good players in that draft. And not to say, oh, well, the Heat should have drafted Russell Westbrook. I mean, it's Beasley was still a talent. This isn't like the Pistons drafting Darko and you're like, what are you doing? I mean, you have all these guys behind him. What are you doing? Beasley was a talent. He just had issues off the court. I mean, they didn't miss on Beasley, I don't think. It just didn't work out. Do you understand what I'm saying? Like, it doesn't work out as opposed to this guy's a bum like Anthony Bennett.
No, he's an NBA player, yeah. You know? Was he a transformative second overall pick in the draft?
No.
And you know what? It's easy to sit there and say, well, the Heat should have drafted Russell Westbrook or Kevin Love or any of those guys. You know who the third player was who went in that draft? Was the
O.J.
question?
Mayo.
O.J. Mayo. How'd that turn out?
O.J. Mayo was a guy just like Michael Beasley, incredible talent at USC, and just never reached his potential, but was still a decent NBA player. But this goes back to like the Ted Ginn thing. Ted Ginn has turned into a very good NFL receiver. Unfortunately, when the Dolphins got him at number 9, it just seemed a little high, but that doesn't mean he can't be a good player. Unfortunately, at 9, you have to be a franchise changer when Adrian Peterson goes 2 picks ahead of you and that guy transforms the Vikings franchise. You can't be good. you need to be great. And Ted Ginn is actually trying to be a very good NFL receiver, but also he's been a good NFL receiver with Drew Brees and with Cam Newton, not with
Chad Henne.
Not with Chad Henne. That's where it changes. And not with Cam Cameron as the head coach. Great transition to the Dolphins, because Adam Beasley will join us coming up from the Miami Herald. We're going to talk about Josh Rosen. We'll see how much of a transformative player he could be. I mean, we'll see if he even starts the season. But we'll talk to Adam about an article he wrote about Josh Rosen, about the upbringing for Josh out in California. And also, just, I guess, an update on what the quarterback situation is between Josh Rosen and Ryan Fitzpatrick. All of that is straight ahead. Kevin Rogers with you right here on 560 WQAM.
Radio.com. Radio.com.
Kevin Rogers with you here on 560 WQAM. We are in the off-season of sports. We're in the off-season of life, it feels like. Anyway, the Miami Dolphins continue their march towards, I don't know how many wins this year, but a very interesting battle at quarterback between Ryan Fitzpatrick and Josh Rosen. It's already started now that Ryan Tannehill is out and Brian Flores is the head coach. And so much going on with Josh Rosen since he came over from the Arizona Cardinals on draft night, and all the talk, did the Dolphins give up too much? Is this guy an attitude problem? All these other things. Anyway, a very good insight into Josh Rosen pre-Arizona Cardinals, pre-UCLA, high school, even before that. Adam Beasley, who covers the Dolphins for years, the Miami Herald, does a great job. He's joining us now here on 560 WQAM. Adam, good to talk to you. How are you?
Hey, Rog, what's up, man?
I'm doing well, and I came across this article. I mean, you really, like, dug deep on this one with Josh Rosen. And for the people that have not read about it, and we'll get to some points in it coming up, just your, I guess, put it in, your inspiration, in a sense, to go out to California and to get these answers about Josh Rosen.
Well, my inspiration was it's 115 degrees here, man, and I can go to California for a week. That's my inspiration. Are you kidding me?
I love it. Good.
Yeah, no. The truth is this. Josh Rosen is the biggest offseason move, maybe second to only Brian Flores, the Dolphins made. And it's what everyone's talking about. It's what everyone wants to know, if he's going to work out, if he's going to be worth the compensation they gave, if the Dolphins have their quarterback of the future. And you look at any of the coverage, read any of the coverage, you listen to any of the commentary, and Josh Rosen is an interesting dude. I mean, he is, I don't know if misunderstood is the right word, but certainly vilified in some circles. The words arrogant, hard to coach, cocky, set in his ways, entitled, and that's just the nice thing, as I can say on the air, have been said about him. And I went out, set out to find, is this accurate? Is this a fair representation of the player? And the people you talk to who have known the longest say no. They say that, yes, he is strong-willed. Yes, he's opinionated. Yes, he's very smart. Yes, he's going to question his coaches. But that doesn't make him a bad teammate. That doesn't make him a bad pro. In fact, you talk to the teammates that I did, and I talked to teammates on the high school and collegiate level, and I talked to his youth tennis coach, because he was a phenomenal tennis player before he picked up a football. They say no, that couldn't be further from the truth. He is, and he's certainly not soft. He's certainly not a guy that doesn't have the competitive fire that you need to win. Look, he comes from super achievers. His dad was a championship level figure skater and is now a spinal surgeon. His mom is a bigwig in journalism, and she played lacrosse at a very high level at Princeton in college. And both of his sisters are high achievers, all Americans. One in tennis, one in rowing. This is an impressive family. And so to think that he doesn't care or he's not driven couldn't be further from the truth. Can he be aloof at times? Can he say the wrong things perhaps at times? He certainly speaks his mind, yes. But to think that this is some kind of troublemaker couldn't be further from the truth.
You know, Adam, there's one thing before we continue with this that I was thinking about when I read this article and when I thought about bringing you on, just a comparison, that is this a really – this is an unfair comparison. I'm saying that up front. But do you think people look at Josh Rosen after last year and seeing his college career, do they compare him to like a Johnny Manziel because of the upbringing, because, you know, his parent – he came from money, I don't need football, I have an attitude. Like, is there that comparison, do you think, or is that totally unfair?
I'm sure people make that comparison, but it isn't fair. I mean, every player is different, and I'm sure Baker Mayfield drove him crazy, the comparisons as well, particularly because the Browns drafted him. Everyone's different. You can't put everyone you come across with that is strong-willed and comes for money in the same Manziel bucket. It's just not fair. Let's take it piece by piece, and I don't want to spend the next 15, 20 minutes being a Josh Rosen apologist. He can do that for himself, and he has in the past defended himself. But you mentioned I don't need football, and that's probably the one. That and the hot tub in his freshman dorm are the two that people hang on him the most, and I'm sure he's the first to admit that if he had to do it over again, he probably wouldn't have a hot tub in his dorm, and he certainly wouldn't have videos of him with girls in that tub, hot tub. It sends the wrong message, particularly as an 18-year-old kid that comes from a lot of means. But the I don't care about football thing, that's not right. It's I don't need football. The point he's making, and he explained it to us after he was traded, was he comes from means. He lives in Manhattan Beach, which I visited last week, and it is pristine. It's opulent. It's a great place to live. It's a very expensive place to live. And the point he was making is he stumbled across a couple of teammates who are sleeping in the team rec room at UCLA because they basically didn't have anywhere to go that night. I don't know the exact circumstances, but that's what he was talking about. He said, his argument was, if I fail at football, I'll be okay. I don't need it to be all right in life. But some of my friends and colleagues aren't so lucky that if football doesn't pan out for them, they could have some issues. So it didn't come out eloquently, and it certainly isn't what GMs want to hear, because kind of in the Neanderthal world of football, you've got to love the game, love football, have 100% dedication to the game. And I think it gets under their skin a little bit that Rosen doesn't play necessarily by those rules.
Adam Beasley of the Miami Herald, who covers the Miami Dolphins, joining us here on 560 WQAM. And just now going to UCLA, and he had a lot of hype going in there, and it wasn't great overall simply because, and you mentioned it, he went through three offensive coordinators, Jim Mora got fired, offensive line wasn't great, defense wasn't great, and yet he takes the blame.
Yeah, it's the play to being the quarterback, particularly when you're the number one recruit in the nation, and you start day one, the first quarterback to ever start day one at UCLA, and you win a national title in high school, and you are, you know, the chosen Rosen. That's the nickname, right? I mean, he's the guy that's going to lead UCLA to the promised land. And to be frank, it's part of the reason he chose that school was the opportunity to do that. And I hadn't asked him about this, but I'm sure it gnaws them a little bit that they didn't have more team success. Oh, look, some of this is on Josh. There's no question. At stretches, he could have played better, and I'm sure he wishes he had a few throws back. I think some broader context is needed, though. You mentioned the offensive line issues. You mentioned the coordinator issues. He was sacked, I want to say, I don't have the number in front of me, but 56 times in 30 games. He suffered a season-ending shoulder injury to his throwing shoulder that necessitated surgery, and for a while they were kind of worried as to, you know, what his future might be. He got that fixed, suffered two concussions as a junior and hid one of them. I don't think I made that point in the story, but he got concussed in the game as a junior and didn't tell his coaches. And they didn't find out until later and obviously set him down for a couple of weeks. He went on to set he was a freshman All-American his first year, and he went on to set UCLA single-season passing record when he played for Jed Fish and his junior year. So the individual success was there, but a player of that magnitude, you need to really blow people away. away, if they're going to, or else they're going to say, why didn't you live up to the hype? You need to win Heismans. You need to play in BCS bowls or whatever they're called today, New Year's Six. I don't know what the exact name is. I don't cover college football, but the games we all watch on New Year's Day, he didn't make any of those. And it falls back on him because he's the quarterback. And you can't fire quarterbacks that graduate or they go into the NFL. You can fire coaches, and that's what happened to Mora. But I think both he and Mora took a lot of heat. I will say this. He had some really, really special games at UCLA. And I think the loss to USC, I talked to Jed Fish last week, and he said he thinks that was Rosen's best individual game. It's not his fault. It's not Rosen's fault that the defense was never better than 50th in yards or points in his three seasons there. And his final year, I think they were 123rd, I think, out of 130 teams in yards. It's not Rosen's fault. But one story that did kind of stick out in my mind, and I included in the story, was they were getting boat raced week one against Texas A&M his junior year. I think they were down 34 points in the Rose Bowl at home, just getting obliterated with all the attention, all the hype, certainly all the pressure for Jim Mora, and they're just getting smoked. A lot of teams would have just folded up shop and said, all right, we'll move on to week two. Second half, he turns to Jed Fish. They're getting smoked. And he says, don't worry, coach, I got this. And they go back and they get it. They it's incredible. They scored 35 unanswered points to come back and win that game on a fake spike Dan Marino throw for a touchdown with less than a minute left. I mean, it was kind of like storybook stuff. And so you go back and watch that tape, and you said, man, this guy can really spin it. And so it just makes you scratch your head why it didn't work out. We can talk about the coach, and we can talk about the talent around him. But I will say this, K-Raj, if he went to Ohio State, if he went to Oklahoma, if he went to Alabama, he would be a two- or three-time national champion. I have no doubt in my mind.
And I remember the Texas A&M game. That was a Sunday game. That was all by itself. And you're watching it saying, wow, I mean, Josh Rosen, UCLA, look at, I mean, an SEC team, Texas A&M, you know, a decent SEC team is just running them on the road. And you say, wow, like, look at this comeback. That, not to say that that should totally be, you know, that's the highlight of your college career when Baker Mayfield is going to the Final Four and some of these other quarterbacks are going further than him. But that's still a hell of an accomplishment to do that.
Agreed. Absolutely agreed. So I'm not going to give him a pass at UCLA. I'm not going to give him a pass at Arizona because the tape is the tape. And he didn't look great at times last year, and he had made some throws in college. I'm sure he regrets. But I think the reason the Dolphins, you know, we get back to the original question about was he worth a second-round pick. The upside's there, man, and maybe they didn't like him at 11 in 2018, but there's a world of difference between taking him at 11 and taking him at 60, and that's what they did. They took him at 60, and they threw in a third-day, you know, lotto ticket, basically, to sweeten the deal to get it done, and it's value, man. It's worth it. Were there any other quarterbacks that were on the board at 60 that you would take over Josh Rosen? Absolutely not. And you have him, you didn't have to pay a signing bonus. You get him for 3 years, $6 million, which is the best value in sports. And if he's great, you fast forward, you head fast forward on the rebuild by 2 years. And if he's not great, you've got your backup for the next two seasons, and you roll with Tua or Justin Herbert or somebody. So there's nothing but upside for the Dolphins here. I like the move. Just the question is this: can Rosen put it together? Because you talk to people who know football, and they say he has one of the smoothest, most natural throwing motions there is. His accuracy is out of sight. I mean, that's what he does better than anyone. He's really accurate. He can throw the football. Again, these aren't my words. These are Jed Fish's words. He just needs to put it together. And my fear, Kevin, is this. He went from a team that had no chance. Is he joining a team where he has no chance? And I don't have the answer to that. I think the Dolphins on offense are a bit more talented than the Cardinals were last year. And I'll take the New England Patriots coaching staff over that dumpster fire of a staff they had in Phoenix any day of the week. But still, he's coming into an untenable situation. It's really tough because he knows the lay of the land. He knows that there were probably two, if not three, really good quarterbacks in next year's draft. And the Dolphins, if they aren't great, are going to probably pick in top 10, top 15, and have a shot, particularly with all the ammo they have to go get one of those quarterbacks. So So he is on a 16-week audition. He needs to play well week in and week out, keep the Dolphins in games, make the throws he needs to make. But the first thing he needs to do is to beat out Ryan Fitzpatrick and be the starter. If he can't do that, it's going to be a long season here.
I want to get to that in a second, but why did Adam Gase pass on him when he had the first shot to get him before last season?
I think that's a question for Adam Gase. I just know that they were not buddies. I mean, was it personality? Was it mechanics? Was it the tape? I don't have the answer, and I don't think Adam Gase will tell you, at least on the record at this point. He's got enough headaches going on. But there's no doubt in my mind that if Rosen had finished his college career and played at the level like he did at UCLA, stayed healthy, he would have been in this year's class. He might not have been the number one quarterback taken, but he certainly would have been the number two quarterback taken. He would have been a no-brainer top 10, perhaps top 5 pick, and the Dolphins got him for the 60th pick in the draft.
Adam Beasley, the Miami Herald, joining us here on 560 WQAM. What did you observe, Adam, when you saw both Josh and Ryan Fitzpatrick with their workouts in the last few weeks?
Well, I want to sit, before I answer that, I want to tell you that this is kind of, you know, Captain Kangaroo. It's like preschool. This is the practice that we have in the spring, and there's no hitting. The protection's garbage because the offensive line can't block. And you have Josh Rosen in here for a month trying to learn a very complex offense. I mean, I don't think that goes. It's appreciated how hard this offense is to learn. And he's behind. The dude is behind, and it's noticeably behind Ryan Fitzpatrick. Can that change? Of course. Will it change? I don't know. But if the season started today, yeah, Ryan would get the start. All that being said, he's going to play this year. Rosen will play because the Dolphins are not good enough to roll with Ryan Fitzpatrick for 16 weeks. He's either going to get hurt or they're going to lose. It's just they're not going 10-6. I'm sorry. It's not going to happen. So say they start 2-5. And Fitzpatrick's okay. He's got some good games. He's got some bad games. They're going to turn to Rosen. He's going to get starts. The question I have, and we don't really have an answer to that question, is can he do enough with what he's given? I think he needs the full season. I think he needs 16 games to really win that job. And to play 16 games, you have to win the job in the summer. Like, to be the quarterback of the future, you've got to be the quarterback of the present. And he knows he has his work cut out for them when they report, whatever it is, July 24th, 25th.
Can I give you another hypothetical, Adam, or just to throw it out there to you?
It's your show, man. Do whatever you want.
Okay, well, I will then. Thank you. If you put Baker Mayfield in Arizona, if you put Sam Darnold in Arizona, I mean, I don't know if Josh Allen's a good example. If you put any of those guys in that situation that Josh Rosen was in last year, do they get the same results?
I don't know. I would say that Baker Mayfield's a special dude, man. And he's won wherever he's played. And could he have helped lift that up? Sure. Were there throws that Rosen missed? Absolutely. Some of his tape makes you cringe a little bit from last year. But would he have had the success he had in Cleveland? Probably not. I mean, that team was flawed up and down. They were down to, like, their 10th and 11th offensive linemen at one point. Steve Wilks, God bless him, is an awful head coach. If he gets another job, I would be shocked. So, yeah, they stunk. They really stunk in all facets of the game. And they threw a kid in there that was 21, 22 years old because he skipped his senior year. And he struggled. So do I think – I mean, Sam Darnold was bad on the Jets. So, yes, he would absolutely struggle on that team. Josh Allen's kind of different because he's got those crazy legs, and when things break down around him, he can make something happen. He looks like a galloping gazelle, like a giraffe. But he can make things happen because Rosen is timing. He needs protection. He needs his receivers to run the right routes. I don't think Josh Allen needs that. He just needs a sliver to run or someone downfield to throw it a mile, but that's kind of his game. But I absolutely, if Sam Darnold was an Arizona Cardinal last year, he would not have been any better than Josh Rosen was.
Do you think Sam Darnold gets a bit of a pass because he's in New York, or I mean, I feel like Josh Rosen got a lot of crap last year because Arizona was so bad. Sam Darnold, we know he has flashes. We saw him at USC. We saw him in the Rose Bowl. But I feel like he got kind of a pass last year compared to Josh Rosen.
Well, yes, but Josh Rosen was also the lowest-rated passer in the NFL. I mean, it's not like – I mean, Sam Darnold had a better body of work last year than Josh Rosen. So he deserves to get more of a pass because he played better. Now, we talked about all the factors as to why Rosen didn't play very well, but it's not like the Jets were great either. So, but yeah, I mean, if Darnold, what did the Cardinals go last year? Was it 2-14? I can't even remember.
Yeah, no, they went 3-13. They beat San Francisco twice, and they beat Green Bay inexplicably on the road.
Yeah, that is inexplicable. Yeah. That will get Mike McCarthy fired.
Yes.
So, all right. So 3-13, and what were the Jets? 5-11, something like that.
Yeah.
4-12, so that's 6 1/2 dozen the other. I'm fascinated to see what they do this year. Both of those all those quarterbacks, to be honest. Does Baker Mayfield come back to earth? I mean, or does he just continue to light people off? Is Josh Allen's woeful inaccuracy finally going to catch up with him? Because he is not an accurate quarterback, and that's, you talk to people, that's not something you can coach. Sam Darnold and Josh Rosen, both in their second system in as many years, how do they adapt to it? Who gets better protection? It's fun. And honestly, I hope he works, because for many reasons. Selfishly, I'm tired of covering bad teams and losing teams and always searching for a quarterback. And two, I think he's good. I mean, I think he's a good player and has a chance to be a really good pro. And if he is, we'll forget all about the hot tubs and the I don't need footballs and all that, because the Dolphins will be good and it'll be awesome and we'll be covering a team that's relevant. I hope he succeeds. I hope the Dolphins in general get much better, because, God, it's been terrible covering these guys for the last 8 years.
8 years? You've been covering them for 8 years already?
This is my 8th season.
Wow. Adam Beasley, the pride of Syracuse, joining us here on 560 WQAM from the Miami Herald, covering the Miami Dolphins. Adam, we appreciate the time. Thank you so much. Great article. Check him out at MiamiHerald.com. Adam, we'll talk to you soon. Thank you.
I really appreciate it.
All right, you got it. There's Adam Beasley right there. And, I mean, he really – he went leaps and bounds to find the story, or to create the story, I should say, regarding Josh Rosen. And I know that there's – you know, it can go either way when you say, oh, well – you know, don't defend him, let him prove it on the field. But there are guys that just are misunderstood. There are guys that you see stories like, well, this is him. And the only reason why I brought up to Adam about, I was just thinking about it off the top of my head with Johnny Manziel. I just thought, like, is there that comparison? You came from a privileged family. You know, you're a very good football player, but are you going to, if it falls apart, do you care? Because you can just have money and be fine. And obviously, you know, the body of work with Josh is not what it is with Johnny Manziel, where we've seen him be a total failure. And then he goes to the CFL and he's a failure there. So we got to wait and see. But I think we're just, I think that one thing that we can say is that we are very curious. You go into the season and you're kind of like, if Ryan Fitzpatrick, for whatever reason, doesn't work out, if he gets hurt, if Josh Rosen beats him out for the job, no one is saying, well, I don't really care. You're watching. You're curious. And there's nothing wrong with that. We got plenty more coming up. Alexander Barkov won the Lady Bing Trophy from the Panthers, so he ended up winning. So congratulations to Sasha Barkov. We're going to talk about that with Randy Moeller and much more with him at 9 o'clock. Talks of Panthers as well. And Danny Garcia has a Mighty Ducks take that we'll get to coming up that we'll see if he's right or not. That's all coming up. Kevin Rogers with you right here on 560 WQAM.
Radio.com. Radio.com. We'll be right back.
Our thanks to Adam Beasley for joining us from the Miami Herald. And Randy Moeller will join us coming up in about 15 minutes or so. FSU and Texas Tech scoreless top of the fourth in the College World Series. Winner advances, loser goes home. FSU has scored one run in the whole College World Series, so tough sled in there. Meanwhile, the Marlins and Cardinals, no score in the now top of the third in St. Louis. Marlins won last night. 26 wins, they're getting there, even though everybody else is 30 or 40 wins. We're in that range.
Now Jordan Yamamoto looks good.
Hey, keep scheduling the Cardinals. Keep scheduling them, and this guy's going to win the Cy Young. That's all I got to say about that. But no, he did pitch well again. And look, they're 19-500, but it's not the worst record in baseball, so I'll give you that one. That belongs to the Baltimore Orioles. Okay, what is your thing with the Mighty Ducks that you want to bring up to
Well, for a little context, I was working here on the night of Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals.
Yes.
And you and our old friend Mike Levine, for those of you out there who don't know, when I first started here at WQAM, I was an intern working with Kevin Rogers and the heavenly tone that is Mike Levine.
Yes.
Working behind here. So, you know, we were going back and forth, and Mike Levine proceeds to put on a gif that involves Lane Smith as the coach of the Hawks, just saying, "Win, baby, win, baby." So this inspired me to go and rewatch the classic film, The Mighty Ducks.
Yeah.
And I have several questions about Pee Wee hockey in Minnesota. Number one, why are the Mighty Ducks District 5? Why is District 5 the cover of every Pee Wee Hockey magazine? And who is publishing said Pee Wee Hockey magazine? And who cares this much?
Okay, that one kind of came out of left field as far as a question. I wasn't ready for that one. I was ready for a continuity question or something like that.
Oh, I've got plenty of them. I mean, that's from starting here.
I guess youth hockey is big in Minnesota, so.
But the D5 team that just kind of got their first tie, that's the cover of the Pee Wee Hockey.
Hey, let me ask you a question. Have you seen some of the city magazines here in South Florida, if you go into a bagel shop or somewhere that you see these that are published and you're looking like, what is this? Like, what? Like, remember the neighbor, still published the neighbor section?
The neighbor section,
okay,
yes.
The Miami Herald, that you go through it and they have all these stories and it says like West Kendall and Hialeah and Westchester and all these other places and Sweetwater and Alapata. So they have these stories. And you don't know these people, but they feature them. So, and they have in Plantation and Pembroke Pines, they probably have these little magazines that they feature, you know, Johnny Smith on the cover winning this award. I think I tricked you in this one. I think I tricked you with the answer. So that's all I can give you on that one.
Okay.
That's all I can do.
And you know what? You know what? I'm going to go ahead and accept that one. Okay. I'm going to accept that
one. It's not great, but I tried.
Okay.
Okay. What's next?
Question two.
Yeah.
This involves Lane Smith's character, who is apparently maybe the most horrible person you want to have dealing with your Pee Wee kids.
And he's a great actor too.
He was
in My Cousin
actor.
Vinny. He was in Distinguished Gentleman. He was Dick Dodge. He was great.
Which is why I wanted to watch the movie, because I love Lane Smith. I mean, anything he's in, it's a winner to me.
Right.
Hang on a second.
Oh, come on. Turn the phone off. Better not be anybody important. It better not be.
The antithesis of important, actually.
God. Okay. So
here we go. Okay. So, now, Emilio Estevez in this movie, or Gordon Bombay, if I will. Okay, now Gordon Bombay
Esquire.
he gets caught drinking and driving, and he has to now coach the D5 league.
Yeah.
So apparently this is community service.
Yeah.
So, but yet Lane Smith is like being the coach of the Hawks. His career is that, like, why is the coach of D5 like on community service, and then like D6 is like, well, you know, we pay this guy, you know, and he's the year-round coach because the Hawks just win, win, win.
Okay. Very fair question. I'm going to go to this one, okay? This is probably another BS answer, but I'll do my best. they fundraise well, I'm sure, because he's got that snazzy jacket. And they have good uniforms. And obviously, hockey's not a cheap game. You got to get the pads. You got the sticks. You got the helmets.
They had to go to Mr. Duckworth for about $15,000.
They did.
Quack, Mr. Duckworth.
And he was also in Dirty Harry, too, Mr. Duckworth. He was in that as well. But they had to, I guess, raise money. And, okay, your question of, is this his full-time job? I'm going to go with no and hope that he's got a job somewhere else, because there is no way that you are pulling a salary coaching a youth team unless you're already well off and you don't need the money and you're just doing this for fun.
Yeah, he would have to be well off because then he'd need to have a job.
Oh, BT Dubs. Dude's been doing it for like 30 years because he coached Bombay as a kid.
Okay, no, Bombay, remember, they came in second place with Bombay back in 1973.
Yeah.
Okay, and this movie is 1990. I want to say it's a 1992 joint, 1993 joint, right around
20
there.
Years, at least.
At least 20 years. So dude's been doing this. Okay, but what do you think Lane Smith's position is? Like, what job do you think Lane Smith...
What's his day job?
Yeah, what's his day? What does he win at? Or is he like a loser in his other job and then he just overcompensates?
That's a very good suggestion. That's a good one because you know he's not a lawyer. You know he's not a doctor. Like that's probably... Because you have all that time, you can't be a doctor. You can't be like, oh, hey, let's hold off this surgery because we're playing the...
The Cardinals.
The Cardinals or whoever in this very important game. We're going to win by 12 goals anyway. They need me behind the bench to inspire them. I mean, you have all these great players. Like, you can have anybody coach that team. So I'm going to go with your job. It's Minnesota. What could you be in Minnesota? I wish I can give you a smart answer and I can't do it.
I want to say maybe he works at like a counter somewhere. Like at a break shop.
Oh, like Auntie Anne's?
Yeah, like something let me go ahead and offer you the snow tire package this time of year.
I thought you meant like at the mall he was working at.
No, like at an auto park. Oh. Kind of like, okay, you know what? Good comparison. Like Lou Brown in Major League. I got a guy on the line for some white walls.
Maybe, okay, that or a hardware store. I'll go with one of those. Okay. Now, he couldn't be a guy working at a hockey shop because that's, what's his name?
It's Hans.
Hans.
And Hans then, got that unlocked.
Hans and then his brother, Franz, or whatever his name was. Who was his brother in the second one?
I haven't seen the second one.
I
had questions about going. I was deciding whether to watch the second one. Or
really?
So I was going to interrogate you a little bit more about the second one. That's where my line of questioning is going to go.
Spoiler alert, Hans dies, okay?
Oh, jeez.
Well, but he died like in between filming, but he didn't really die because he's still alive. He was in Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey.
I was about to say he was Chuck Denomalos.
Only you and I have seen that movie. No one listening has seen that movie. That's it. It was just us. So we know who he is. Anyway, okay. So that's the one. So yeah, I'm going to say hardware store or auto parts place or an auto dealership. Auto dealership, maybe. That's the one.
Auto dealership. I can see him as a car. Yeah. I can see him as a slick car salesman.
Yeah. Yeah. And he pops the collar after he makes a sale.
Okay.
Okay, next.
Okay, so going forward, so apparently Gordon Bombay played with a member of the Dallas North Stars who gives him a tryout.
The Minnesota North Stars.
I'm sorry if my hockey teams are too current or too past.
No problem.
Okay, so apparently he knows this guy. He played peewee hockey with him. Now, can you imagine an NHL player going, hey, I played peewee hockey with you. You want to try out a minor league team?
Wait a sec. But that was Basil McRae and Mike Modano, right?
Yes.
Okay, Mike Modano was a big – he went to Dallas, and he was a big star with the franchise. So, and he was like the second guy in that scene. Basil McRae, I think, was a veteran at that point. But – Disney, give him a break.
Well, like, let's be honest. Like this is
he
definitely...
does get a tryout in the second one. So another spoiler alert because the movie only came out 20 years ago.
Okay, but
anyway.
No, that's fine. I really don't care.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna assume he completely fails his tryout and comes back and has to be a peewee hockey coach for the rest.
No,
of his
No, he doesn't. But should I tell you what happens?
Yeah, please.
Okay. Yeah, I don't want to. You know, spoil this for you. So in the second one, in the beginning of the second one, he is playing in the minors. He suffers a knee injury.
Oh, come on.
He gets a stick to the knee. What do you? I mean, he gets like the Marty McSorley treatment. You know, he gets the.
This guy hasn't played hockey in 20 years.
No. I think he hasn't played competitive hockey. He's played. He still is a. He was a natural.
Okay, I understand that he was a natural, but he was a natural when he was like 12.
So, anyway, next.
Okay, Adam Banks. Let's go on. Let's move on to Adam Banks.
Cake eater.
Yes, cake eater.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know what that means. I don't even know what that means.
I don't know. It's like, listen, dude, this is the Disney version of the Bad News Bears. So it takes out everything that make the Bad News Bears cool and sanitized it.
Okay.
Okay. So Adam Banks here. Now, according to Lane Smith, he's going to go all the way. All the way to where? High school? Like.
All the way. I remember he got transferred because they redid the district lines, but what do you mean all the way?
Okay, well, he keeps saying, like, remember, when he first sees Gordon Bombay there, he's just like, hey, you know, Gordon Bombay. And he's like, hey, what's going on? He's just like, well, I got some good kids, especially that kid Banks there. Banks might go all the way. And I'm thinking, well, how far do you coach them, Lane Smith? To high school? Like, what is all the way for you?
I mean, I got to think that once they hit like high school that like they move on, because this guy's not coaching them forever.
Exactly.
Yeah, so okay.
So you know, I mean, just little things, just this little thing that were bothering me.
Next. Is that it? That's all? That's all you got?
Yeah, okay, I'm good. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Do they win the championship in the second movie?
Well, do you know what the plot of the second one is?
I'm going to assume it's got just a rehash of the first movie.
No, I'm seriously, Danny, I'm surprised that you have not seen the second one. I just thought you would have. The third one you're not missing. Okay, so the second one, he's coaching the USA junior hockey team.
By the way, does Lane Smith come back for the second one?
No, Lane Smith's done. Lane Smith does not come back. He's gone. Like he's
defeated.
He's defeated. He retires. He's done. He can't handle it anymore. So Emilio Estevez is now the coach of the USA, like, Goodwill Games. Remember, that's like the Junior Olympics, whatever it was, in the early 90s. He coaches them, and he has a big part of the Ducks, but also kids from around the country are also, they throw them all in there. So one of the kids is Benny the Jet from The Sandlot. He's from Miami. It's so like...
Oh, that's fantastic. But
it's so... You know, stereotypical. He's like Luis Mendoza from Miami, and you know, and he can't stop. He skates. His big thing is he's a fast skater, but he can't stop, so they have to teach him how to stop, whatever. So they have all these different players. They try to mesh them with the main team. Adam Banks comes back, and he's fine. With, you know, okay.
Now he's a Duck.
Right. And the other one is who we're watching with the NHL is Keenan Thompson is in it. He's Russ Tyler. He's a kid from like South Central LA who's like, you know, trash.
Don't tell me he's like in gangs or anything like
that. Well, no, it's like Disney. It's like, it's not really a gang, but he's like trash talking them at the games. Like, I'm a better hockey player than you, and they, whatever.
Oh, okay.
And they play like when rollerblading was cool, they have like a rollerblading, like, find your soul game. And he has the knuckle puck. That's his like signature shot. So he's like a defenseman, and he has this knuckle puck in it, and it beats the goalie. So he joins the team.
That reminds me, now that we're on the second movie, it's back to a question for the first movie. The big kid who could shoot?
Fulton.
Fulton. Did Fulton ever learn to skate?
He did. And he has now another kid that's like the Bash Brothers. So it's like two guys that are like now like the goons of the team. But he doesn't really score a lot, I think, in the second one. It's them two are like goons. Anyway, so... They end up going and they're playing Iceland, and the villain coach is no longer Jack Riley. I was going to say Dick Dodge is Jack Riley. It's now the coach from Iceland who was a former NHL player, was a real like dirtball, and all the kids in the Iceland team are like 17, and all the kids on the U.S. team are like 14. So like this is seriously like
So everyone else cheats but the U.S.
It's like Little League World Series stuff. I mean, you see these kids, they're like freaking 17 years old, all these kids from Iceland. So they end up beating Iceland. They get blown out in one of the rounds against them, and they end up beating them in the end, and whatever. Emilio Estevez wins. His brother wins, but he wins.
Whatever happened to Emilio Estevez?
I think I said what happened to his brother. That's a big question.
But Tardy Sheen, doesn't he have like AIDS or something?
I don't know. That's stuff. He should be spreading that stuff.
No, I'm dead serious.
He should be spreading that stuff either.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.